This is 69 the podcast. I'm Dave Haynes. 69 has been covering the digital signage industry since the dawn of man, first online and now as a podcast. The goal on here is to make listeners aware of interesting companies, smart people, and new technology developments, all of them meaningful in making digital signage projects happen. I try to help listeners understand sometimes complicated subjects and why they should care. The podcasts are free and I try to get a new one out weekly, but things happen now and then. The 69 podcast has been gratefully sponsored and supported since the start by Jeremy Gavin and the fine folks at ScreenFeed, the digital signage content store. ScreenFeed makes beautiful looking, totally automated content for signage and digital out-of-home networks. Check them out at screenfeed.com. 69 has been around since 2006, and the publication and podcast are now owned by Spectrio, which provides customer engagement solutions for business. You can find them at spectrio.com. The healthcare sector has long struck me as having environments and dynamics that would benefit a lot from using digital signage technology. Accurate information is critically important and things change quickly and often in ways that make paper and dry erase marker board solutions seem antiquated and kind of silly. But it's a tough sector to work in and crack because of the layers of bureaucracy, tight regulations, and the simple reality that medical facilities go up over several years, not several months. People often talk about the digital signage solution sales cycle being something like 18 months on average. With healthcare, it can be double or triple that. The other challenge is that it is highly specialized and there are well-established companies referred to as patient engagement providers. So any digital signage software or solutions company thinking about going after healthcare business will be competing with companies that already know the industry and its technologies, like medical records, and also have very established ties. LG has been active in the healthcare sector for decades and sells specific displays and a platform used by patient engagement providers that the electronics giant has as its business partners. I had a really insightful chat with Tom Motlow, LG's Director of Healthcare Sales. Tom, thank you for joining me. Can you give me a rundown on what your role is at LG?
Yes, sir. So I am the Director of Healthcare Sales for LG. Been at this role for some time now. Came on with the company in 99, and so been selling quite a bit into the patient room for some time.
And has most of your focus through those years all been on healthcare?
Well, actually, when I started, I was a trainer when we were going through the digital rollout, when we were bringing high definition into living rooms. My house was actually the beta site for WXIA for a time there till we got our language codes right. But then soon after moved over to the commercial side in healthcare, like around 2001, 2002.
Oh, wow. So yeah, you've been at it a long time then. Much has changed.
Yes, sir.
And I guess in some cases, nothing has changed.
Yep.
Healthcare is an interesting vertical market for me because it seems so opportune, but I tend to think it's kind of both terrifying and very grinding in that they're quite often very large institutions, sometimes government associated or university associated, and very few things happen quickly. Is that a fair assessment?
Absolutely. There's a lot of oversight into the patient room. It's a very litigation rich environment, can be. And so there's a bit of bureaucracy to kind of cut through to make sure that you're bringing in something that's both safe for patients and protects their privacy but also performs a function that's useful.
I guess the other big challenge is the build time. So you can get word of an opportunity for a medical center that's going up in a particular city. And realistically, it's probably 5, 6, 7 years out before it actually opens its doors, right?
That's true. And not only that, but very often, capital projects, they go through a process. The gestation period can be, a year or two.
Yeah.
From the time you actually start talking about the opportunity.
And when it comes to patient engagement displays and related displays around the patient care areas, is that something that's schemed in by engineers and architects early on, or is that something that start talking about, you know, 3-4 years into the design and build process?
Well, the part that's schemed in is often, you know, what size displays are we going to need? Mm-hmm. So, for example, if somebody is looking to deploy maybe a 2-screen approach or a large format approach, that's the type of things that are discussed early on. Mm-hmm. But then when they come up on trying to decide between, you know, the patient engagement providers in the market, you know, they do their full assessment at that time because things evolve and also needs change. Mm-hmm. You, in that whole period that may take a couple of years, you know, you may go like we did from an environment that absolutely wanted no cameras to an environment that kind of wanted cameras after COVID, you know? So things change. So they're constantly having those discussions.
And why that switch to wanting cameras because of COVID?
Really, because, you know, the hospitals were locked down. You couldn't go in and see your loved one. Mm-hmm. There was a thought that if we can limit the in-person contact, maybe we could save lives. Mm-hmm. And so there was a lot of thought around using technology to overcome those challenges of a contagion.
Right.
And so, you know, there was funding dedicated towards it. There were a number of companies focused on it.
Yeah, that's interesting because I wondered whether in the healthcare sector, whether business opportunities just flat dried up because the organizations were so focused on just dealing with COVID, or whether it actually opened up new opportunities or diverted budgets to things that maybe weren't thought about before, like video.
True. Yeah. I mean, you know, the video focus was definitely because of COVID, but then again, you know, you had facilities that all of their outpatient procedures had dried up, so they were strained from a budget standpoint.
Right.
And so they had to be very picky where they spent their dollars. Now, you know, equipment in the patient room, at the end of the day, they still were going to get the same flow of patients. People don't choose when to be sick. It was going to be either the same or higher because of those with COVID. Mm-hmm. So they still needed to supply those rooms with displays. You know, even though they were going through a crisis, they still had to budget and still had to go through their day-to-day buying of that product. Mm-hmm.
Is this a specialty kind of application and solution as opposed to something that a more generic digital signage pro AV kind of company could go into? My gut tells me that in order to be successful, you really need to know the healthcare environment. You can't just say we've got these screens, we've got the software, what you need.
Yeah, very good question. So everything we do on our end is driven by VOC, voice of customer.
Okay.
We partner with the top patient engagement providers in the country. There's a handful that are what we call tier one. We actually provide them products that they vet out before we go into production. We go to them to ask them, what do you need? Mm-hmm. What products do you need for that patient room? And that's where the patient engagement boards, the idea of patient engagement boards came from. That was we had to provide them a display that met at the time 60065 UL, which is now 62368-1, so that they can meet NFPA 99 fire code. And
I love it when you talk dirty.
Yeah. There's a lot of stuff out there that even
what
I,
the hell is he talking know, about?
Yeah, I know enough to be dangerous. It's basically what it boils down to is we want to make sure that our products are vetted by a third party. UL is considered a respectable testing agency, and that's why you find mm-hmm. most electronics are vetted by them. And so they test them in the patient room. It's a high oxygen environment with folks that are debilitated and life-sustaining equipment, so the product has to be tested. So we knew that we had to provide a product for our SIs that would meet those specs as well as other specs that they had. Like mm-hmm. they wanted something that, you know, could be PoE powered because it takes an act of Congress to get to add a 110 outlet into a patient room. It's just wow. a lot of bureaucracy for that. So we decided to roll out two units, one at 32, which is POE, one that's 43. All those things I just mentioned into consideration, mm-hmm. as well as things like lighting. Folks didn't want a big nightlight, so we had to spend a little extra attention on the ambient light sensor and that type of thing. And this is our first offering.
So for doofuses like me who don't spend a lot of time thinking about underwriter lab certifications and so on, just about any monitor, well, I assume any monitor that is marketed by credible companies in North America is UL certified, but these are different grades of UL, I'm guessing.
They are. Going back, you know, back in the day of CRTs, if you take it all the way back then, you know, when you put a product into a room that has a high powered cathode ray tube mm-hmm. and there's oxygen floating around, you know, it's something that safety is always of concern. So, you know, going way back when, probably driven by, again, probably driven by product liability and that type of thing, we all wanted to produce a safe product. And that's why we turned to those companies. And mm-hmm. the way that works is we design a product, we throw it over to them, and they come back and say, okay, this is great, but you got to change this, this, and this. Mm-hmm. It could be anything.
Okay.
And then we go back and forth until we arrive at a product that's safe for that environment with that level of oxygen, with all everything else into consideration in that room.
Hmm. Is it different when you get out into the hallways and the nursing stations and so on? Do you still need that level? Like any, you know, within, I guess, a certain proximity of oxygen or other gases, you need to have that?
It depends on the tolerance of the facility, because there is no federal law per se, or and JCO could vary, you know, in how they feel about it. I know in Florida they tend to be very strict, but as a company, we had to find a place to draw that line, like where can we be safe and provide, you know, general products, and where can we provide something that's specialized. And that's where usually the patient room, oxygenated patient room, is usually the guideline. If there's oxygen in the walls and, you know, that type of thing, that's usually the guideline, and the use of a pillow speaker.
Okay.
Outside into the rooms or into the hallways, not so much, but depends on what the facility. We lay out the facts and let them decide on that.
Right.
We sell both.
Is it a big additional cost to have that additional, you know, protection or whatever you want to call it, engineering aspects to
yes.
it? Or okay, so it's not like 10% more; it can be quite a bit more.
I'm not sure the percentage, but there's
a noticeable usually, amount.
Yeah, I would say because keep in mind it's typically not just achieving those ratings. It's some of the other design aspects that go into it. I mean, the fact that you have pillow speaker circuitry to begin with, mm-hmm. you know, there's a cost basis for that. There's a cost basis for maintaining, you know, an installer menu with 117 plus items. There's, you know, a cost basis for maintaining a ProCentric WebOS platform, you know,
right.
So you do tend to find, because of those things, not just any one of them, but because of all of them collectively, yeah, the cost is higher. I would also say that the, you know, warranties tend to be more encompassing. It's
right.
not like you have to drive it down to Ted's TV. Somebody comes and actually remedies on site.
Right.
So yeah, all of that carries a cost basis. That's why, you know, if you're paying for that value.
You mentioned that you sell or partner with patient engagement providers. Could you kind of characterize what those companies do and offer?
Yeah, and there's a number of them. And really what I'll do, just to be objective, is kind of give you some of the tier ones, the ones
sure.
that, you know, take our product over years and years and have tested and provided back, and the ones that have participated in our, what we call our development summit. And I'll touch on that in a moment after this. But so companies like Akeso, you have Unigast, who was TVR, that mm-hmm. offers the P-Care solution. You have GetWell, you have Sonify. Those type companies, they've been at this for years. And as I mentioned, we have a development summit that we for years, I've piled these guys on a plane, the CTOs, gone off to Korea. And the way I describe it is we all come into a room and I say, we're about to enter Festivus. We want you to tell us all the ways we've disappointed you with our platform. And we sit in that room, we get tomatoes thrown at us, and then we make changes to the platform to accommodate what they need. Mm-hmm. And then that way they're confident that they're deploying a product that, you know, we've done all we can to improve the functionality with their patient engagement systems. Because after all, we're a platform provider is what we are.
For over a decade, ScreenFeed has been the reliable choice for beautifully designed, licensed content such as news and weather. We handle over 27 million requests a day to deliver dynamic content to 200,000 screens across the globe. Now we bring you ScreenFeed Connect, a no-code solution that makes complex content projects easy. Projects that used to take our designers and developers weeks became a to-do we could complete before lunch. The easy-to-use browser-based tool leverages pre-built data connections and ready-made widgets to give you the power to design with data. Create team member profiles, schedules, tenant directories, progress boards, featured products, or anything that leverages your data. Discover how Connect empowers you to complete projects faster at screenfeed.com.
Define patient engagement. What would be the technology mix that you would typically find in a modernized or newly opened patient care area?
So that would be going back years ago. I guess it started more with patient education. If Mrs. Jones is having a procedure on her kidney, they wanted her to be educated on what she can eat, not eat, and that kind of thing. And so they found a way to bring that patient education to the patient room over the TVs. But then they wanted to also confirm she watched it. And then it went on from there. Then it's, okay, it's not only the entertainment, but it's also things that help improve workflows, maybe even the filling out of surveys, Press Ganey surveys and whatnot on the platform, being able to order your culinary, just knowing who your doctor is, questions, educational videos, all of those things. And then link up with EMR.
So they EMR? Can bring in
EMR, yes.
What's that?
Electronic medical record. So basically,
oh, gotcha. Okay.
So over the years, what's happened in healthcare is that they want to move away from paper. Just to put it very simple, They want to move away from paper. They don't want, you know, somebody's vitals in different aspects of their health, you know, stored on a hand scribbled note in several different doctor's offices. So there's been an effort to create electronic medical record. And so now that has kind of been something that our patient engagement providers have tied into those solutions into the room.
Mm-hmm. So is the hub, so to speak, the visual hub in a patient care room, just a TV, or is there other display technology in there, like a almost like a status board that's, you know, telling them, you know, who your primary provider is, all the other stuff?
Sure. So it started as the smart TV, the BroCentric WebOS smart TV. But then as time went on, we kept getting those requests for, say, a vertical mounted solution where somebody can actually walk in the room, see who their doctor is, see who their nurse is. Maybe the physician can come in and understand certain vitals of the patient. And so that's why we developed separately those patient engagement boards and they started out as non-touch upon request. Mm-hmm. We went with the consensus, and the consensus was we really need controlled information. We don't want, you know, we've had enough issues with dry erase boards. We want something that there's more control in entering that information. Mm-hmm. And interesting enough, we're now getting the opposite demand. We're getting demand now to incorporate touch on the future models. And that's how things start. As you know, to your point earlier, folks are initially hesitant of breaching, you know, any type of rules with all the bureaucracy. And so now, once they cut through all that and they feel comfortable with a start, then they're willing to explore more technologies within those rooms. That's why we always start out with one, and then over years it evolves.
I assume that there's a bit of a, I don't want to say battle, but it takes some work to get at least some of the medical care facilities to budget and approve these patient engagement or status displays, just because there's additional cost and it's different from the way they've always done things, and it involves integration with, as you said, the EMR records and all that stuff. So is there a lot of work to talk them into it?
Well, you know, you have to look at us like consultants where, you know, we avoid just talking folks into things. Really what it has to do with is again, going back to VOC, voice of customer, the way we were doing this years ago, up till these boards were launched, was to provide larger format, and the SIs were dividing up the screen.
Gotcha.
And that was the way we always recommended. But then once we started getting that VOC, they were coming to us saying, okay, well, we need to get these other displays in the room. You know, certain facilities were saying, hey, we absolutely need this. And we were saying, well, we don't want to put something that's not rated for that room. Mm-hmm. You know, and then we realized we had to really start developing a product that suit that environment. And so we, you know, our job is to make folks aware of what we have and let them decide which path they're going to take. Because to be honest, there's two different ways of approaching it. You can use one screen of 75, divide up the screen, or you have two screens, like say Moffitt did. Moffitt added the patient engagement boards. That's what they wanted.
Right. I have the benefit, at least so far, of being kind of retirement age and spending very, very, very little time, thank God, in any kind of patient care facility. Maybe that'll change, hopefully not. But I've still seen dry erase marker boards at the nursing stations and in rooms and in hallways and everywhere else, and thought, why is it still like that? Why haven't they cut over? Is that still the prevalent way of doing things, or are you seeing quite a bit of adoption of these technologies?
Well, it is, I would say, just because we're very early in all this. Yeah, that is the prevalent way still to this day, no doubt. It's really those tech forward, future forward facilities that they're wanting to kind of go beyond that. And not only that, you know, there's a lot of facilities that want to bring all that in, and maybe just the nature of that facility is a lot more conservative, and we have to respect that because ultimately they're having to maintain it. We wouldn't want to give somebody something that they can't maintain. Or not have the budget for. I mean, at the end of the day, they're going to come back to us, and whether or not they trust us is going to be based upon whether we advise them, you know, correctly or incorrectly. If we advise them incorrectly, they're not going to trust us. They're not going to buy from us 10 years from now.
For your business partners, the companies that are doing the patient engagement solutions, how difficult is it to work with their patient record systems and their building op systems and so on to make these dynamic displays truly dynamic? Is it a big chore, or is there enough commonality that they can make that happen relatively quickly?
That's a very good question, and that's exactly why we're very careful with who's tier one and who we may advise folks to approach. Really, those companies I'd mentioned earlier, they're very skilled at what they do. And so they're taking our product as one piece of an entire system that involves many other components.
Right.
And I have full faith in their ability to do that because, you know, we sit in on those meetings once a year. We hear feedback. We hear positive feedback from facilities. We see it. But it really couldn't happen without those partners, I would say. We made that choice years ago to be that platform provider that supports those partners and doesn't compete with them.
Yeah.
And in hindsight, I think that was a great choice because it provides more options to the market utilizing our platform.
Well, and being sector experts in everything that LG tries to touch would be nightmarish. You're far better off, I suspect, to be with partners who, you know, wake up in the morning thinking about that stuff.
Yeah, I mean, we know our core competencies. We're never going to bite off more than we can chew. And we also, now granted, we understand a lot of these areas more and more these days. There's a lot of development supporting things like telehealth and patient engagement, EMR and whatnot. But mm-hmm. we're also going to make sure that at the end of the day, we're tying in the right folks to provide the best solution we can to patients.
How much discussion has to happen around network security and operating system security? I mean, if you're running these on smart TVs, they're then running WebOS, which is probably to the medical facilities IT team foreign or not terribly familiar to them.
Yeah, very good question. You know, facilities, hospitals, anything that involves network security brings them an acute case of indigestion.
Yes.
More so than other areas in the business world. These folks, a lot of times there's exhaustive paperwork whenever you have something that links up to the internet or something that's going to open up those vulnerabilities. Mm-hmm. So ProCentric WebOS is actually a walled garden approach. It's not something that is easily hacked. When you have a walled garden approach and something that's controlled with a local server, that's why we took that approach. Now, we can offer them a VPN, you know, if there was something if they wanted to do external. Mm-hmm. But these systems were decided upon years ago and built with security in mind, because we knew we were going to deploy in very sensitive commercial environments. And so not so much a concern. You don't need to pull our TV out and link up with some foreign server, you know, as you might a laptop that you buy, mm-hmm. you know, that demands updates. It's not anything like that, because of course that would open us up to vulnerabilities. So we don't take that approach. It's typically a local server, and there is the ability to do some control of the server if you wanted a VPN. But other than that, there is no access.
Right. Do you touch on other areas of what we would know as digital signage within a medical facility? Like I'm thinking of wayfinding, directories,
yeah.
and you know, donor recognition, video walls, those sorts of things.
Absolutely. I mean, we see everything from, wayfinding needs have been for years and years now, and those are only expanding. And, you know, we start to see some that require outdoor displays for wayfinding. So we do have solutions for that. We also, beyond displays, we actually have robots now that we're testing in medical facilities and have had a couple certifications on some of those.
What would they
do? As well as EV charger. Well, the robots would be used primarily for deliverables, to deliver some type of non-sensitive product. I know there's some work down the road, or let's just say there's some demand for medical medication delivery. But obviously, LG's approach to any demand like that is to vet it out, make sure we're designing it properly, and then we can make announcements later on that type stuff. But for now, we're taking those same robots that we're currently using, you know, say in the hotel industry, and we're getting demand, you know, for that type of technology be used in a medical facility.
Right. So yeah, like surgical masks or, you know, some sort of cleaning solutions or whatever that need to be brought up to a certain area. You could send an orderly, but staffing may be tight, and get a robot to do it.
Absolutely. And that is a very liquid situation. There's a lot of focus and a lot of development. I'm sure there'll be a lot to announce on that front. But it's all very fluid, and it's all finding its way into that environment with mm-hmm. our own company. You know, there's all these future forward needs, not only the robots, but EV chargers for, you know, the vast amount of electric vehicles. And we find ourselves involved in discussions on all these fronts with our medical facilities these days.
Mm-hmm. It's interesting. Obviously, AI is going to have a role in all kinds of aspects of medical research and diagnosis and all those super important things. But I suspect there's probably a role as well, right down at, you know, in the lobby level of a hospital where somebody comes in where English isn't their first language and they need to find the oncology clinic or whatever, and there's no translator available. If you can use AI to guide them, that would be very, very helpful and powerful.
Let me write that down as a product idea. Actually, AI is something that is discussed in the company, I would say, on a weekly basis. Mm-hmm. And again, there, I'm sure there'll be plenty to showcase in the future. But yes, I'd say we have a good head start in that area that we're exploring different use cases in the medical environment.
It's interesting. I write about digital signage, obviously, every day, and look at emerging markets. And I've been saying that healthcare seems like a greenfields opportunity for a lot of companies. But based on this conversation, I would say it is and it isn't, because if you are a more generalized digital signage software platform, yes, you could theoretically do a lot of what's required, but there's so much insight and experience and everything else that you and business ties that you really need to compete with these patient engagement providers that I think it would be awfully tough for just a more generalized company to crack, wouldn't it?
I believe so. I mean, we've seen many come and go. You know, we have certain terms internally, you know, medicine show, Wizard of Oz. There's a lot out there. You really just have to kind of vet them out to see who's legit, who isn't. And I'm sure there's some perfectly legitimate companies that we, you know, that maybe we haven't worked with yet, probably in areas outside of patient education. You know, we have these discussions every week, and it can be difficult because there are companies that you might not have heard of, and you're always trying to assess, you know, how valid is this? And that's a tough one.
Mm-hmm. Last question. Is there kind of a next big thing that you expect to emerge with patient engagement over the next couple of years, 2-3 years, that you could talk about?
Sure. You hit the nail on the head, AI. I think that's okay. Something. But, you know, keep in mind, you know, that's something in relative terms is a relatively, just the last few years, has been something that's come up a lot. You know, it seems there's a 5-year span where something is a focus. You know, going way back, it was going from analog to digital.
Yeah.
You know, when I first came here, it was going from wood cladding CRT tube or CRT televisions to flat panel.
Mm-hmm.
You know, now we have OLED right in front of us. There's a lot of progression in this market, and I would say AI is one of them. Telehealth is another. I guess we'll find out for sure. You know, which one sticks. That always happens that way.
Yeah.
But we don't ignore them.
Yeah, certainly I think AI is one of those foundational things. It's kind of like, you know, networking. It's going to be fundamental. It's not a passing fancy or something that'll be used for 5 years and then move on to something else.
Yeah, true. But then again, also, it's kind of like when everybody was talking about, okay, we're not going to pull RF cable. That went on for years and years because they were all going to pull Cat 5. And then next thing you know, they're saying, well, we have to go back and add Cat 5 because they got ahead of themselves.
Right.
So I think the challenge for any company is nobody wants to develop the next Betamax. Everybody wants to develop something that's going to be longstanding and useful. And so it's incumbent upon us to vet out those different solutions and actually see real practical ways of using it in the patient room and trusting our partners and watching them grow. Right. A lot of times they're the test beds. And so that's the benefit of our approach. You know, by providing that platform and supporting those partners, we get to see which tree is really going to take off.
Mm-hmm. Betamax, you just showed your age.
Yes. Yes, sir. That make 8-track, right?
For the kiddies listening, that's VCRs. All right. Thanks, Tom. That was terrific.
Thank you very much, sir.
Nice to speak with you. That's it for this week's episode. I hope you enjoyed it and maybe you learned a thing or two. If you're new to 69, it's a podcast that's been around since 2016. You can click around the archive and find hundreds of conversations with smart industry people. If you're new to digital signage, you need to be reading 69 at 16-9.net. You'll find more than 8,000 posts by me and expert guest writers about this industry. 16-9 is not a press release republishing mill like a lot of the stuff out there. If something makes it on 16-9, that means it matters in some way to the business. Everything about 16-9 is free. Great sponsors make my work possible, and the key one here is ScreenFeed, the digital signage content store. Check out all the curated and automated content available at ScreenFeed.com. 16-9, the blog, and the podcast are now owned by Spectrio, which does customer engagement solutions, most of that digital signage, for all kinds of businesses. You'll find them in the Tampa area and online at Spectrio. That's Spectrio.com. You'll find me working out of a sunny back room in my house located outside Halifax, Nova Scotia, on the east coast of Canada. Thanks for listening. I'm Dave Haynes.